This is Frederick Van Johnson from This Week in Photo and the TWIP Network. You're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 8. Do photojournalists go too far, or is Donald Trump just a meanie? In this episode, the Donald loses his cool with an AP photographer. Do animals have a right to copyright? We tell you who's suing on their behalf. Photoshop Elements has some cool new features. Rolf in Germany wants to know what gear to use to get the most depth of field when shooting landscapes. Another photographer loses her life's work. All that and more in Episode 8 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Frederick, for opening the show. I've been a huge TWIP fan for years. And thank you, everyone, for joining us here in Episode 8 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. All right, before we get into today's show, we have a special guest who would like to comment about a story we had in Episode 6.
Hey, everybody, I'm Jim Harmer from the Improved Photography Podcast, and I've been loving Petapixel's new podcast and everything that Sharky James does. I want, however, to make a little response about one comment that was made from the article, The Dark Side of Photography, a few episodes ago. The podcast and the article mentioned that it was, quote, abusing your subject for something the cormorant fishermen do in China, and that is that they'll take their cormorant birds and they'll dunk them underwater, holding them by the neck, and then set them on the little bamboo rafts that they have so that they'll spread their wings and look more interesting in the photograph. And what was cited in the podcast and article and by Jimmy McIntyre was that this is cruelty to animals. And that's just not true. And I want to explain why it is, because it's a different culture and we can often rush to snap judgments. Well, the reason the fisherman holds the bird by the neck is because it's the safest place to hold them. Just like how a dog will hold the puppies by the back of the neck, a lot of animals, that's the safest place to hold them, and the wings can be fragile. So that's why they do that. And these are wet animals. In nature, they spread their wings to dry out because they're always diving underwater. This is a jet black bird in a very hot, humid area of China in Xinping and Guilin. And so it's very important for these animals to get wet to hydrate. And that's part of the reason they open their wings, is so that they can get air flowing into the animal. So what we've established is, one, it's not harmful to hold the bird by the neck, and two, it's definitely not harmful to put them in the water or dunk them under the water, because they do that all the time in nature. They need to do that. And the other comment that was made in the article is that the reason that these cormorant fishermen no longer fish is because of all the modeling that it destroyed the tradition. And that's just not true either. I talked to Andy and Mia Beals, who live in Guilin for most of the year. They know all of the cormorant fishermen personally, talk to them all the time. I've met these cormorant fishermen, and when they ask the cormorant fishermen why they stopped fishing, well, it's because of the pollution in the water, number one, and number two, because in China, there is a lot of illegal fishing where people will electrocute the water, essentially, and then pick up the fish. And once all that illegal fishing and pollution entered the Li River, the yields were just too low. And about the same time, the modeling on the Li River started picking up. And so these men who have done this in their families for generations now can share their culture and heritage with photographers who come to visit there. These are not men who are rich by any means. They have no creature comforts whatsoever. I've been to one of their homes of one of the actual few last remaining traditional cormorant fishermen. These are wonderful people, and I think it's wrong to snap a quick judgment about people across the world who we don't understand. As I've looked into it more and investigated, actually, they love their animals. They're not only working animals, but prize pets, and they would never do anything to harm them. So I think it's important, as we photograph different cultures, that we seek to understand before rushing to judgment. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Petapixel, and thanks to Sharky for giving me this opportunity to make a mention of that. You can read my full article, my response to this, on improvephotography.com. You'll see it on the homepage. Bye.
Jim messaged me later on Twitter and wanted me to briefly mention that he forgot to add that DL Cade was kind enough to respond to his article and printed a retraction on 500px. We also have that as well over on petapixel.com. All right, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Love him or hate him, Donald Trump sure knows how to make the news. But making the news by attacking those in the news biz? That's always risky. In this case, the Donald lashed out at an Associated Press photographer over photos showing empty chairs at a speech that he gave recently in South Carolina. He alleges that the photojournalist purposefully shot the event in a way which portrayed him in a negative light and made it look like Trump couldn't fill the room. Mick Smith, the photojournalist in question, transmitted photos from the event which individually tell two different stories, but together give a more clear picture, pun intended, of the story. One photo was shot from the front of the room and appears to show Trump speaking to what you would think was an overflow crowd. All the seats appear to be filled, as well as many of those in the front row, and some of them are in the area between the seats and the stage, filling that area. Let's call it the Trump mosh pit. Okay, Trump supporters are not so much the mosh pit type, but let's just think of it that way for the moment, all right? So that particular photo makes him look great and portrays him in a very strong light. You would think that a lot of people showed up. Ah, but it's the second photo that's got the candidate's famous hair messed up. In this particular photo, Smith went to the back of the room while Trump was speaking, and the better part of seven rows of seats are completely empty, thus telling a completely different story. But it depends on how you look at it. If you're a cynic, perhaps, you look at the second photo and think that Trump might be weak and can't even fill a room. But it's a ginormous room. Picture a large ballroom at a fancy hotel, and you get the picture here. Again, pun intended. Well, Trump didn't at all appreciate the second photo, to say the least, and lashed out at the photojournalist saying, quote, "The photographer is a effing thief. Tell them that they're a fraud, whoever took it. I just got killed on that thing, and it was really unfair. It's God blank unfair," end quote. Now, of course, I clean that up because we have a clean rating here on the podcast, but you get the idea. The Daily Mail asserts that he actually spoke the expletives. Trump went on to say, quote, "The point is that everybody from the back rushed to the front, and the people who put out the pictures knew it. And they said, oh, look, the back 25% is empty. I was speaking from the podium. Everybody was wrapped around the podium. If they hadn't done that, there wouldn't have been an empty seat," end quote. Politico, though, reports that photos and tweets from other journalists appear to confirm that there was unfilled capacity at that venue. According to Jane C. Tim of MSNBC, Trump spoke to, quote, "a half-full room of white people," end quote. Now, obviously, that's slanted in an extremely left direction, but still, take it for what it is. Jonathan Martin with the New York Times reports that, quote, "about a third of the seats were unfilled," end quote. In a tweet, Martin went on to say that Trump's first event had, quote, "scores of empty chairs," end quote. Well, this ignited a firestorm as people accused him of lying, and Trump himself took the reporter to task, calling him, quote, "dishonest." Now, the Associated Press is standing behind the photos, as they should. They both show the room as it was while Trump was speaking. This is a catch-22, as editors often have room for just one photo, and it needs to accurately depict the scene. Or does it? Many will choose the photo that best supports the belief of the publication they work for. If you're a left-leaning publication, you're going to probably, let's say, show that it's more empty. If you're a more conservative publication, you're going to go with the first photo that looks really, really strong for Donald Trump. Just a guess. With these photos going out on the AP wire, I suspect that both photos were used around the world, some choosing one over the other, and perhaps some used both. One thing that people may not know about photojournalism is that the photographer has a lot of power and often has a lot of discretion. I'm a former photojournalist and I know what can be done. You could shoot with a long lens, compress the heck out of a scene, and make it look like an event was packed. You know, one sees wall-to-wall people in a photo and your brain tells you that, well, the people probably continue well past the frame. But shoot the scene with a different lens and a different technique, with just a few people in that frame and lots of breathing room around them, and you naturally assume that it wasn't very well attended. So a photo can be very misleading. This is where the cut line under the photo and the article come into play, and an honest reporter and their editor will set the scene for you. But many will steer things to go along with their agenda, and we all know that. I understand Trump's point, but photojournalist Mick Smith did nothing wrong, and he shouldn't have been attacked like that. He shot the heck out of that room as he was trained. He submitted photos which accurately covered it. Remember, one of them makes Trump look very good. And the candidate not only lashed out at him, but in my opinion, could have looked a little bit more presidential and used better language. I think we expect more out of someone who's running for president. You just don't hear those kind of words on the campaign trail. Well, now you do, I guess. Okay, U.S. copyright law is junk if this plays out the way that animal rights group PETA hopes it will. As you may recall, in August 2014, we all had a good laugh over a monkey in Indonesia named Naratu, who grabbed the camera of wildlife photographer David Slater back in 2011 and proceeded to take some now-famous selfies. Whether the monkey knew what he was doing or not is up for debate, but one thing is clear, and that is that this story is not. Clear, that is. Well, PETA has filed a suit on behalf of the monkey, asserting that somehow it is the legal copyright owner of the photos it took rather than Slater, and that all proceeds from the photo should benefit the monkey. Seriously? Does the monkey need a new coat or something? I'm sorry, but that is just ridiculous. PETA argues that the U.S. Copyright Office's decision to exclude animals from its system is not set in stone, but rather is, quote, only an opinion, end quote. Now, let's remember that this is PETA. We're all aware of their actions in the past. This isn't even the most outrageous thing that they have ever done. Slater argues that he owns the copyright to the photos. He was granted that in the UK, where he's from, and that he and his family have every right to earn money from the photos. That seems reasonable to me. But then again, I'm a photographer, not a monkey. A monkey couldn't do this job, trust me. Well, maybe some of it, a lot of it, I don't know. He tells the AP, quote, "The facts are that I was the intellect behind the photos. I set the whole thing up. A monkey only pressed the button of a camera set up on a tripod I positioned and held throughout the shoot," end quote. On petapixel.com, we took a poll asking readers who should own the copyright to the photos. Of the more than 4,800 respondents, approximately 79% said the human, 8% said the monkey, 2% had no idea, and 11% said they didn't care. It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. I believe that animals have rights. However, does that extend to copyright? Let's hope not. I'm sure this monkey is doing just fine flinging his poo, and he doesn't care about any of this. As you may recall, we reported on the browser-based photo editor called Polar, that's with two R's, back in February 2015, and 4 months later we covered the launch of their iOS photo editing app, which saw an amazing 250,000 downloads in just 2 days' time. Their company's president tells us, quote, "It has been hard to find a place where photographers can really compare the same real images from the same lens, same ISO, and shutter speed at the same aperture, all interactively," end quote. So they created Lens Battle, where you can compare actual photos side by side and make it a lot more easy to be able to see the differences. The site is launched with comparisons of 6 different 50mm lenses for Nikon DSLRs across 5 different scenes, and each was shot at 6 different apertures. In comparing the images, you can zoom in and out and have a closer look, and whatever you do to one photo is done to the rest of the images, thus making it easier to compare them. Lens Battle says that in the future, they're going to be comparing 35mm and 135mm primes, as well as 16-35mm wide zooms and the 24-70 and 70-200mm lenses. Make sure you check back at lensbattle.com from time to time. If you don't have the full-blown version of Photoshop, but wish you had dehaze and blur reduction, you might be happy to hear that the way less expensive Photoshop Elements 14 has these features. Along with those two really cool items, you'll also get better photo organization, improved face recognition, 34 guided edits and tips as you post-process, 5 automatically generated effects for you to choose from for each shot, advanced hair and detail selection, a new quick edit mode, and social sharing tools. Gotta have those social sharing tools, right? Why not? Everything else does these days. You can pick up Adobe Photoshop Elements now for $100 US. And if you shoot video, you might be interested in Adobe Premiere Elements 14, which is also available now and is $100 as well. Even better, they can both be had as a bundle for just $150. Honestly, if you've been eyeing Photoshop, give Elements a shot. It has what most any photographer needs out there of big boy Photoshop and is a lot cheaper. We're talking hundreds of dollars cheaper. Personally, though, I think Adobe Photoshop Lightroom is what most people really need and want. So unless you're digging in and doing a whole lot of layers and masking, etc., you don't need big boy Photoshop, in my opinion. Either way, you have some really nice, extremely capable options available to you. Legendary Japanese photojournalist Kikuhiro Fukushima has passed away as a result of suffering a stroke at age 94. He was a vocal opponent of Japan going to war in World War II and spent decades documenting the war and its aftermath there in his homeland. He's also the only photographer to have covered the aftermaths of both the nuclear bomb dropped on Hiroshima in 1945, as well as the Fukushima nuclear disaster in 2011. In 1982, he gave up on photography and moved to an island with his partner as its sole inhabitants. He refused to take pension from the Japanese government, the enemy he had been fighting for decades with his photography, so he got by writing for magazines. Kikuhiro Fukushima, dead at 94. How do you make your Facebook videos more interesting while also spending the kids' college money, you might ask? Well, at $15,000, GoPro's new Odyssey rig, which consists of 16 separate GoPro cameras in a specially designed disc-shaped housing, will get the job done. It'll also clean out your wallet. According to Facebook, quote, "You'll be able to hold up your phone and the 360-degree video will follow as you turn, looking around to experience things all over the world like never before," end quote. But will this thing catch on? Virtual reality technology has been hyped for 20 years now? Does anyone really want to watch videos as they mess around with it? You'd have to watch the same darn video a few times just to have a shot at seeing everything that was filmed. I could be wrong, but I don't think that this will be the next big thing. And at $15,000 to create them, I suspect that we're not going to have many of these available to choose from before we make that decision. Everyone wants to know how to make money in photography, and apparently it's with really awesome photo composites of icebergs. Thanks to Frederick Van Johnson, who you heard open this show a little bit ago, we learned of a photographer he interviewed named Ralph A. Clevenger, who by 2012 had earned over $900,000 with his iceberg composites. And this is something that a mentor of his at a stock photo agency came up with and he implemented. $900,000. That's just amazing. Well, there you go. So here's how you do it. You travel somewhere incredibly cold and shoot icebergs above and below the water. It's that simple. Okay, maybe not. I'm sure this is just the tip of the... Wait a second. All right, too easy. Let's move on. Let's pretend that did not happen. Getting a photo to go viral is not easy. If you've tried, you know this. You need a good hook. Well, for Australian wedding photographer Edwina Robertson, it wasn't too difficult as she posted a photo and said that for every share the photo got over the next 24 hours, she would donate $3 to Tie Up the Black Dog, a charity which helps those fighting depression and mental illness in rural Australian communities. Thousands of people took her up on the offer, as you might imagine, making the photo go viral, and she's committed now to donating $14,922 to the charity. Even better, many thousands more were raised through crowdfunding as a result. The photographer told ABC she figured she'd get up to 500 shares or so, not the 4,975 the photo received. In case you're wondering where the money is coming from, she'll be donating the funds that she had set aside to buy a new car, but I have a feeling she's going to make that all back and then some, as people surely hire her to thank her for her good deeds and her excellent photography. Thanks to the Aussie crowdfunding site, OzCrowd, an additional $32,000 was raised for the charity, so that was quite successful, and a lot of people are going to be helped because of it. So if you want your photo to go viral, make sure you have a lot of cash and donate it to a charity. If you've been wanting a GoPro but didn't want to spend quite that much, the GoPro Hero Plus at just $200 US may be for you. This new camera shoots 1080p 60 frames per second video, has Wi-Fi, and is $100 cheaper than the Hero Plus LCD model, and is $70 more expensive than the basic Hero, which lacks the 60 frames per second capability and Wi-Fi connectivity. The Hero Plus can also shoot 720p 60 frames per second video, 8 megapixel stills, do time lapse, has a burst mode, and is submersible down to 40 meters, among other features. It's available on October 4th, 2015 for just $200 US. And if you're interested in the cube-shaped Hero Session, GoPro is also dropping the price on that model from $400 down to just $300. So maybe squeeze out what's left of the nice weather and pick one up. Okay. I feel a rant coming on, but I'm going to try my best to restrain myself. We'll see how well that goes. In episode 2, we talked about a photographer who thought it was a good idea to store images from 20 plus shoots, along with 2 laptops, 6 memory cards, and her wallet, outside in her car overnight. Yeah, not very wise. Well, Oakland, California-based photographer Jennifer Little lost a whole lot more last week when her home was broken into. Not only did she lose 8 of her cameras, that's right, 8 cameras, the burglars also made away with 21 hard drives containing her life's work as a professional photographer. Now, as you all may know, I take issue with the term professional when stuff like this happens. Because if you are a professional, you ensure that something like this wouldn't happen. That's just my opinion. But I think a lot of you back me up on this. If you're doing this for a living, you have at least one of those backups off-site. In other words, in the cloud or somewhere like a family member's home or a safe deposit box. Keeping your life's work on 21 hard drives full of your images in your home where there could be a fire, a flood, or in this case, a home invasion is, in my opinion, irresponsible and negligent. Now, I feel badly for her, but could this have been avoided? Yes. Yes, it could have. All right, back to the story. As TV station KBCW reports, on those 21 hard drives were roughly 70,000 irreplaceable images spanning the 10 years of professional, and I'm doing air quotes here, work that Little had done since she got her master's in fine arts degree from the University of Texas in 2005. Her name is Little, and that's exactly what was done to protect those images. I swear, sometimes these things just fall together. And the person's name just happens to go along with the story. I don't make this stuff up. Okay, that was a short rant. Let's move on. Amazingly, she was walking through her local flea market the next day and spotted one of her stolen cameras and 4 of her lenses. She's asking that the drives be returned and is offering a reward with no questions asked. But honestly, chances are better than not that she's never going to see those drives again. And the images on them are gone forever. And that could have been avoided. I don't think anyone would argue against that. Now, remember, she's holding herself out there to be a professional. A professional doesn't let this happen. Surely she had to have known that worst-case scenarios sometimes happen. And hey, all hard drives will eventually fail at some point. All of them. That is a fact. This is really frustrating. Even if one doesn't know that hard drives fail, you've got to know that backing up your images might just be a good idea. It's common sense. This is an educated woman. She has a master's degree. And she appears to have the means to back the photos up. At one point in the video that this news station did on her, you can see a ginormous professional Epson printer the size of a sofa in the background. It's easily a $3,000 to $4,000 Epson printer. So, in my opinion, she could have dropped some cash on backing up her hard drives off-site. No question about it. So, let this serve as a lesson to everyone. Don't let this happen to you. Hard drives are relatively cheap these days, and software makes backing things up pretty darn manageable. 4-terabyte drives are as cheap as $150 these days, and for about $50, you can also buy a dock. You pop in a drive, copy your photos over, pop in another drive, then you take those bare drives over to a friend's or family member's house, put it in your bank safe deposit or whatever, but do something. If your images aren't on a drive or drives somewhere else away from your home or office, like Little, you can't really complain about when the worst case scenario happens and you lose everything. And that may not even be theft. It's actually likely to be drive failure. Multiple copies of your data, in this case photos, and maybe videos as well, are your best bet, I believe. Okay, that wasn't too bad of a rant, but we all learned something here. Again, people aren't careful with their images. This certainly won't be the last story we do on this either. You know it's true. Today's listener question comes from Rolf in Germany, who recorded his question via our voicemail widget.
Hello, Sharky. This is Rolf calling from Frankfurt in Germany. I'm a big fan of your podcast, and thank you very much. For my taste, it's the absolute perfect mix from respect and sarcasm, in which you present always nice and informative topics. And I hope you keep going. As a small contribution, I also would like to ask a question or ask for some recommendation. I'm a beginner and not very skilled, but I would like to take a landscape photo, which I plan to print in a larger size. So let's say maybe 3 by 8 feet. And to achieve the best possible or most possible depth of field, I wonder if it is better to use a smaller size sensor or a full frame sensor, since I heard the smaller size sensor gives some more depth of field. So maybe there is an optimal or ideal combination between sensor size and resolution. Maybe you can give me some hint and some help. Thank you very much, and please keep going. Take care. Bye.
Thank you so much for the kind words and for your question, Rolf. I really appreciate it. Wow, 3 feet by 8 feet. That is quite large. I don't know how far this print would be viewed from, but here are my thoughts. It's true that with a full-frame sensor, you can more easily achieve a shallow depth of field than you would with a body that has a crop sensor inside. If you're on the Nikon system, full-frame is FX, and DX signifies crop sensor. But since you're not going for a shallow depth of field, but the opposite, I don't think this is as much of an issue. There are quite a few factors, and one of them will be lens choice and how that lens deals with being stopped down to, let's say, f/22, as you want as much in focus as possible. Given the choice, however, I would go with a full frame body any day of the week. And the reason is that that larger sensor and the resolution that it affords you is going to help you greatly. An appropriate full-frame body with a quality lens, which looks great stopped down to f/22, along with a solid tripod, and you're good. What you also want to do is get familiar with a hyperfocal distance calculator, such as the one on dofmaster.com. And if you focus on a subject at that hyperfocal distance, you will significantly increase the depth of field in your image by a large magnitude. Now, since you're going to be making such a large print, you may wish to shoot multiple images, stitch them together, and come out with what's going to be a ginormous file, but you'll have incredible resolution when it comes time to print that beast of an image. Now, if you have access to a GigaPan, that might help you greatly, because that is going to definitely help with stitching things together and shooting them properly. So my recommendation would be go for a full-frame body with a nice lens, a sturdy tripod, focus at your hyperfocal distance, and I think you'll find that you'll have made an even better photograph than you may have otherwise thought possible. I hope that really helped you, Rolf, and thanks again for your question. If you too would like to have your question answered here on the podcast, hit petapixel.com/podcast and look for our voicemail widget. You can also mention your photography business and get some love. I say it every episode, ask me a question, get some love. Easy as that. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 8 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm at LensShark, LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 9, where I'll be coming to you from Chicago. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. Time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.